Looking sideways as she saw the other villagers, she paced the line, yelping, turning back and forth, desperate for a way through. "Get!" Samson shouted, striking at Callie with his staff. The dog flinched, tucking her burning tail between trembling legs. Helwaz realized that she was crying now, felt the hot tears tracking down her cheeks, though she couldn't hear her own weeping over the sound of the roaring flames. The dog turned, faced Helwa's mother, tucked her head. Helwaz knew Callie had made her decision. The dog jerked left, then dove right, racing toward the gap between Helwaz and Luba. Helwaz moved toward it, frightened that Brother Tone might see her, letting it go, but her heart wasn't in it, and she was much too slow. Luba cried out, swatting the creature on its fetlocks and falling on her backside. The dog howled and bolted through the line, disappearing into the woods behind them. No one spoke. All behaved as if the dog had never gotten through, eyes fixed on the wood, straining to see if the pilgrims had noticed. A shout sounded in front of Helwaz, and a man stepped out from between the trees. His head dipped inward, like an egg that had been dropped on its side. Blood coursed from the wound, bits of yellow and gray flowing into his beard. Alma Shepherd, looking for his dog. His eye was gone, his speech slurred, as her father's did when he'd drunk too much beer. "You killed us!" he shouted. "You bastards! You killed us!" The words fell on Helwaz like a hammer. "It wasn't us," she wanted to shout. "It was Churik. Papa told you to put him out." Alma lifted a short bow, the string long since snapped, and aimed it at Helwaz. He tried to pull the broken string, stared in confusion at his hand passing through the air. "Done nothing," he whispered, drooling. "Killed us." And then Brother Tone was behind him, flail moving through the air, the black spikes crashing into Alma's head, sending him toppling sideways, the light going out of his remaining eye. The iron stuck in his skull, and the pilgrim put one boot on the man's back, worked his arms to pull it free. It came away with a wet slurp, spraying blood. Helwaz watched the red droplets race toward her, saw the solid pieces in the mist, shut her eyes. "Oh, no. Please, no." She felt the hot touch as it splattered across her face, the pieces sliding down her neck behind her dress. She cried out, fell to her knees, her stomach lurching. Someone called her name. Her father, maybe. She looked up to find the sound, saw Brother Tone, standing over Alna, his flail rising and falling, as steady as her father chopping wood, bringing it down into the red-gray mush that no longer looked like a man. Helwaz could hear herself screaming, as if the voice came from a long way off, another girl, just like her. She tried to remember her father's words. "It was necessary. The veil must be shut." But she looked at the man slowly pounded into the mud, at the pilgrim's burning eyes, his teeth bared, bent on the completion of his task, chopping wood, pounding dough. This wasn't right. This couldn't be right. More screams. A girl ran from the woods, coming straight toward her. She wasn't much older than Helwaz, her dark hair full of leaves and blood, mud on her face. Her dress was torn away, and she clutched the ragged remains to cover her nakedness. Helwaz barely recognized her. It was Ostra. Ostra, who had played with her when she was little. Ostra, who was going to learn letters from her. Ostra, who had promised to show her her betrothal dress. Her throat and thighs were bruised, her new breasts poorly covered by one flailing arm. Another pilgrim was hard on her heels. His hood was back, his eyes lit with the same hunger she'd seen before in men. He was a heavy man, in armor meant for riding, and he ran slow and clumsy until at last he stumbled and fell on his face. "Stop her!" Brother Tone shouted. He struck out with his flail, missing her by a hair's breadth. Astra pounded toward Helwaz, closer and closer. Helwaz knew she was supposed to get to her feet, trip her, something. No, this is wrong. Helwaz knew it would mean her life to help Astra, but she wasn't sure she could do otherwise. She tried to stand, but the horror unfolding in her gut made it impossible. She fell forward, vomiting in the dirt. Helwaz turned, saw her father twitch toward Astra, but his eyes filled with tears, and he didn't move further. Astra vaulted over Helwa's head, and the pilgrim followed. Helwaz fell in her own sick, sprawled on her side. "No," she tried to say, only mumbled. Astra dashed up the path nearly as fast as Kali. Brother Tone's voice was lost in the screaming and the roaring fire. Helwaz wondered if her father would move to help now, or her mother, but no one did. Brother Tone's boots let him run over the rocks and roots, but he was older and heavier, and the girl wasn't wearing armor or carrying a heavy flail. As Helwaz got back to her knees, the space between the girl and the pilgrim widened. "Go," Helwaz whispered. "Run." Astra ran, letting her torn dress fall. Brother Tone was panting now, big shoulders heaving. He swung his flail, cutting air behind her. Then Astra's foot came down on a stone, turned sideways, her tiny ankle taking all her weight. She shouted, fell. Tone reached her in three steps, bringing his iron-shod boot down on her back, raising the flail's long shaft, and bringing the spiked head swinging into the air over them. Astra lay face down, pale and still, as if she were already dead. Helwaz didn't scream this time. She had no screaming left in her. The sickness was a low buzz in her belly. Her arms and legs felt weak and heavy. She closed her eyes, but it didn't stop her ears, which heard the wet crunch as the pilgrim brought the flail down again and again and again. There was silence then. The crackle of the flames behind Helwaz were almost soothing, warming her shoulders, the back of her neck. Crunching of boots, a shadow falling on her. "You let her go." Helwaz opened her eyes. Brother Tone's cloak was soaked with gore, the wet fabric sinking into the gaps between his pauldrons and breastplate. His hood had fallen back, his face covered in blood, so that he looked made of red, save the bright blue of his eyes. "This is what a devil looks like," Helwaz thought. "This is what you see before they take you."
"You let her go," Brother Tone said again, and now Helwaz realized that he was speaking to her father at last. Tone shifted the flail from his shoulder into his hands, swinging the head. "I see the portal in your eye now. You are a gateway to hell, wizard tainted. You betrayed the Emperor." And then, in barely more than a whisper, "And you don't have your village mob to help you now."
"He's going to kill my father," she thought. She could hear her heart beating, a slow pounding in her ears in time with her breathing, as loud and close as the bellows in Barnard's workshop. The pilgrim's flail swept before him as he raised the shaft. Sounds loud in her ears, her mother shrieking, her father shouting,
She was just a little girl.
She could hear Brother Tone's boots hitting on the ground as he raced for her father.
Don't hurt my papa, she thought. But she couldn't speak, couldn't move.
Now, when she needed her anger most, it would not come. She heard the crash of wood against wood over her head as two shafts met, the sound jolting her on her backside. Her father and Brother Tone snarled at one another, knuckles white on their lengths of wood. Helwes fumbled with her fingers, scrabbling over the roots and rocks, heedless of the thick wetness that covered everything.
You dare!
Tone hissed at her father, pressing the flail haft in and down, trying to free the spiked head enough to swing it at him. Helwa's hand closed on a loose rock. It was small, a skipping stone, really, not big enough to hurt anyone. She choked back tears for a battle cry and brought it down on the top of Brother Tone's boot. The leather was so hard that she might as well have struck iron, but Tone cursed and looked down, eyes leaving Samson's for just a moment. And then Brother Tone was falling back, reaching out with the flail to stop himself from landing on his back. Her father followed him. The bristle on his face was gray, and his stomach hung over his belt, but his shoulders were wide and his eyes clear. He held his staff like a pike, thrusting to catch the pilgrim as he tried to get his balance. The pull struck Tone's cheek loud enough for Helwas to hear. The gray cloak tangled the pilgrim's arm, and Tone stumbled back, finally stopping his fall with the flail. A dark bruise was already showing on his face, blood trickling from the corner of his mouth. Helwa's father came after him, trying to keep him off balance, but the pilgrim had his wind now and knocked the pole aside. Samson rocked back on his heels and slid smoothly into a wide stance, holding the pole over his head, pointing at the pilgrim.
You killed a little girl, you bastard!
Tone looked at Samson's stance.
You're a veteran, aren't you?
Come on, damn you, her father said.
The pilgrim smiled, a white line across his red face.
This isn't the old war, and that's not a pike.
He spun the flail's head. And he's not alone, Sigir said, stepping out of the line, holding his pole just like her father. Brother Tone looked left and right. He was wearing armor, and his spiked flail looked a lot stronger than the wooden poles.
So be it, he said, smiling.
Aye, Barnard said, stepping out of the line, raising his own pole.
So be it, pilgrim,
and may the sacred throne bear witness. Brother Tone's eyes widened, then narrowed. He walked backward, ignoring Barnard and Sigir, looking at the man who had given him the bruise.
I'll be back for you,
he said to Samson, then turned and disappeared into the wood. Chapter 5 We didn't have to do it. From the journal of Samson Factor. Colum marched over the Castle Rock yesterday and took up the King's Highway. Came across a Kipti band living in their wagons. They sharpened our pike heads for us and mended cartwheels. Good job of it, too. They say every Kipti is at least half tinker. The levy pilgrim was furious that we gave custom to heretics, but that didn't scare the captain.
Writ won't fix our wheels, he said, nor make our weapons sharp.
Saw the pilgrim later, when he thought no one was looking, having one of the heretics mend a locket some sweetheart had given him. The sun was beginning to rise when another pilgrim stumbled wearily out of the drifting smoke and dismissed them with a wave. No more people were driven their way. There was a scream here and there, but most of the night was spent standing in silence, squinting through the drifting ash and boiling smoke. They climbed back into the cart, exhausted, eyes down. It was silent for the jostling ride back, the same look on every face. Exhaustion, mostly, but also something that looked like shame. No one spoke of the dog who had escaped, or of the girl who hadn't. Samson's brow was furrowed, his cheeks purple. He didn't talk about his fight with Brother Tone, and Helwas knew it would be unwise to bring it up. Helwas wanted to shout at them all, at herself. "This is our fault. We did this."
"Had to be done," Samson said. "I told Jaren to shut that simpleton up."
Helwas didn't realize he was speaking to her until Luba put a hand on his shoulder.
"Husband." "It had to be done," Samson repeated, cutting her off. "You have to remember that. A knitting is a terrible thing, but the devils are worse. The Emperor did it for us once. Now it's for us to do it for ourselves. That's our strength. His gift to us."
It didn't feel like a gift. Churik was simple. He wasn't a wizard, she thought.
"If even one had gotten through," Samson tapped Helwa's knee, "it could have been worse."
Then what about Callie? Helwas thought. Her father was lying, not just to her, but to himself. Worst of all, he expected her to repeat the lies, to act as though up was down of her own free will. It was a stupid, wicked way to live, and the smoke still smudging the darkening sky showed how it ended.
"Had to be done," her father said, straightening and looking away.
But the words had an upward tilt at the end, like he was asking a question. At last, the cart rocked to a stop, and Helwas looked up to see them back on the village common. Her arms and legs felt like they'd been filled with metal. She sat as the cart slowly emptied, her parents slumping to the ground. Samson turned back to Helwas.
"Come on, girl."
Helwas wasn't ready to move yet, her mind still whirling.
"Leave her," Sigir's voice. "I'll send her along in a moment."
Helwas heard her father hesitate, then grunt assent. Her parents' steps dwindled in the distance, and still Helwas sat, feeling the cart rock as the people left, until suddenly it was still, and she knew she was alone.
"Come on, child," Sigir said from the ground beside her.
The grief in his tone was honest, and it gave her the strength to stand. The mayor looked tiny from his place beside the cart, as thin as the poles they'd carried, his ash-streaked face shadowed by the growing darkness, eyes bruised-looking from exhaustion. He held up a skinny hand.
"Calm down now. It's over."
"Papa says we had to do it," Helwas said. "He says, if we hadn't, the devils would have come." Sigir said nothing as she took his hand and jumped down to the ground. She looked up at him, saw the horror on his face, the deep lines the day's events had cut in him. "Did we have to do it?" she asked.
"No," he answered, his voice breaking,
tears falling into his beard, to turn the flakes of ash to gray slush.
"No, child. We didn't."
Helwas thought she should feel angry at his words, but when she searched her heart, she could only find fatigue. "Then why did we?"
"Because they would have killed us if we refused," he answered. "Because it would have been our village. Our fields, our families, they knit."
"Why us? If they're so worried about wizard blight, they can use the army." Sigir shook his head. The army has other tasks. Old Ludwig may be rotting in his grave, but his generals still fly the red banners. This work falls to the order. He took a deep breath and spoke again. And making us complicit means we will never call them to account for the crime.
But what if we fought them? Papa hit that pilgrim in the face and...
And I hit him in the boot with a stone, though no one saw, she thought. Your father is very brave, and he loves you very much. I pray that he will not be made to pay for that. It is one thing for a man to fight another man. It is another for a village of men to try to stop the might of the Order.
But we have tipstaffs, and the tinkers have
He covered her mouth with his hand, not roughly, just enough to stop her speaking. His palm smelled like smoke and burned meat.
We have both spoken heresy today.
It's a dangerous thing, Helwaz. I'll answer your question, and then we'll speak no more of this. And you have to promise me that you'll remember that while your thoughts are your own, the words you let pass your lips belong to the world, and the world will not always take the meaning you intended.
She nodded. Most men in this village fought against Ludwig in the old war. I knew your father then. He was a brave man and strong. He would fight like a lion to protect his home and hearth. But war also taught me odds. How many men and how many swords you need. How much time must be spent in the drill yard, learning to hold a line, to shore pikes and stand against a charge. We would lose, Helwaz. We would lose quickly and utterly, and the wages would be just as bad as in knitting. Maybe worse. We are farmers and smiths and wheelwrights. The Order speaks of ministry, but it is the paint over the board. The wood beneath is killing. It is what they train to do. It is what they are equipped to do. It is all they do.
They stood in silence for a moment, Sigir slowly mastering his tears. At last, he brushed a lock of her hair back behind her ear and sighed.
I'm sorry, Helwaz. The world is not as I would have it. Go tell your father to come to me. We must decide what to do now.
Helwaz turned to go, but Sigir called her back. Remember never to speak of what was said here tonight. The pious might take it amiss, and we will have trouble enough with what your father has done.
He left her then, and the world that had been so full of smoke and flame and screaming was replaced by the last shreds of cool night, stars beginning to fade as the sun banished the moon, the soft, warm glow of the hearth coals dancing in the windows of her home.
Helwaz! Her father, his voice rising. Come now, girl!
She ran to her father. Once again he was in danger because of her. He should be angry, but he wasn't. He caught her around the shoulders as she came through the door, pulling her in. She tensed, expecting a scolding, but instead felt the soft surface of her mother's bosom, her father's hand on her back. She blinked, realization dawning. He was holding them. Helwaz could feel his breath coming in short gasps. He's trying not to cry. The thought terrified her.
It's all right, Papa, Helwaz said. It's all right.
It's not all right. My little girl, Samson sighed. It will never be all right.
He held them for another moment, then stood away, an arm on each of their shoulders.
You are dear to me, the both of you. You should remember that.
Luba nodded silently. After a moment,
Helwas did the same. It's over, he said, though he looked like the one who needed comforting. It's over now. Not my first knitting, Luba said. We're alive and we're together. And that's what matters. They were silent for a while after that, and then Samson shook his head and took his wife's hand. Aye, wife. It's so. We'll speak no more of it. The mayor wants to see you, Helwas said. He says you have to figure out what to do now that you hit that pilgrim. The kindness winked out of Samson's face. I said we'll speak no more of it. But Papa, enough! Her father's cheeks reddened. Samson, Luba laid her hand on his arm. They will come for you. You must flee.
Flee where, woman? I'm a factor, not a trapper. I cannot feed myself in the wild with the winter coming on. And if I do escape, what then? Where will I go? Who would take me in with the order set against me? Who will give me custom? I would be a beggar.
Luba took a deep breath, spoke slowly. Better a living beggar than a dead factor.
The factors have lived in this village since before the veil was shut. This is my home.
Samson, Luba said. You must. The door banged open.
What are you still doing here? Sigir said through clenched teeth, storming in. They're coming for you. You come into my house.
Samson began.
Spare me. Sigir cut him off. You have to go. You have to go right now.
Samson repeated the argument he'd given Helwas and her mother.
I'll not argue with a fool. I'm the mayor, and you are now in exile. Pack a ruck and leave. I'll send the tipstaff in an hour. If you're still about, he'll beat you blue.
Samson nearly turned blue himself.
I'll damn well do for him like I did for that pilgrim, and then you'll have a dead tipstaff and me still at home. Think of your family, Sigir shouted. I am thinking of my family, Samson answered. What will they do? You said it's to be a lean winter. Who will feed them?
Someone will, Sigir began.
Who? Samson waved his hands. Maybe for the first month, but what about the second and the third? Who will guard them if the brigands come again? And what's to become of me with no trade to ply and no place to go? I'm more dead gone away than I am if I stay. If I am to die, I'll do it at my own hearthside.
Sigir opened his mouth to speak, shut it. For a moment, the mayor struggled, jaw straining. At long last, he sighed.
Come to the gathering hall, then. Barnard saw the fight, and who knows who else. We'll have to parley on it. There'll be some for putting you to flight, no doubt. The Emperor is my judge, Samson said.
And the Order are his hands in this world. In case you hadn't noticed, they have judged you unfavorably. Samson nodded, and then turned and placed his hands on Helwa's shoulders.
Run to the Tinkers, and fetch Barnard to the gathering hall. It's after dark, so straight there, and then straight home to your mother. Mind me.
Master Mayor, Helwas said to Sigir, tears pricking at the corners of her eyes. Will you turn Papa out? Can't you just tell everyone to make him stay? Helwas felt like she was two people at the same time. One Helwas saw the foolishness in her words, the great risk her father took, not only for himself, but for the entire village. But that Helwas was trampled by another, louder Helwas, who desperately wanted her father to stay, wanted everything to go back to how it was before they had met the Order on the road. Sigir shook his head sadly.
I am a mayor, not a lord. I will speak for your father, but I am but the loudest voice among many. Do as your father says and fetch Barnard. We don't have much time.
Run along, dove, Samson said. It will be all right. You'll see.
I'm coming with you, Luba said.
"You know full well that the Gathering Hall is no place for wives," Samson said.
"I'll not have this be the last time I see you," Luba said again, balling her fists. "I'll stand at your side, and the town fathers will have to look me in the eye as they speak their peace. Might be that will make them think kinder of what they say."
"It won't help," Samson said. "He's right," Sigir agreed. "Stay here and wait for Helwaz. Children are not allowed at Parlay, either. And you can't have an unmarried girl of 16 winters at home alone."
"If it's exile," Luba began.
"If it's exile," Sigir interrupted her, "I will let you have your farewell, and you can tan the hides of the town fathers beside your husband before he goes." He reached out and touched her wrist. "We have been friends and neighbors since we were children, ma'am. Trust that I labor in your defense always."
Luba's cheeks were red, and her hands shook, but she nodded.
"Very well. May the sainted Palantines watch over you, husband. May you stand in the shadow of the throne."
"I always stand in the shadow of the throne," Samson said, and turned to go. Helwaz stood frozen to the spot, until her mother swatted her backside hard enough to get her moving.
"Go on! Run as fast as you can and fetch Barnard!"
Though she had gone a night without sleep, Helwaz ran faster than she had ever run in her life. Even with dawn coming on, the sun was still not high enough to light the world, and the common green was a blurring gray plain beneath her pounding heels. Helwaz was never let out on her own this early, and in happier times she would have thrilled at the sudden freedom. But these were not happier times, and she thought only of her father's fate, her stomach hurting and her breath burning as she burst into the tinker's workshop to find Barnard before one of his anvils, hammering away at a piece of metal, cherry red going to slate gray under the blows. Basina stood beside him, holding the metal steady with a pair of black iron tongs. Helwaz stopped short. The tinkers hadn't slept all night either. Whatever she'd expected to find, it wasn't this.
"You're working."
Barnard didn't look surprised to see her.
"It helps me think. It gives me peace.
Sigir wants to see me," Barnard finished for her. "About your father."
Helwaz choked back tears. "Will you speak for him, Master Tinker?"
Barnard set the hammer and metal on the anvil and swept her into a tight embrace.
"Always, Helwaz.
Always."
And then he was moving, his long strides carrying him to the workshop door as fast as she could run.
"They're at the Gathering Hall," she shouted after him.
"I know,"
Barnard said without turning, and vanished into the gray dawn. Helwaz felt Basina's presence before her arms slid around her, hugging her from behind. Her tow-colored hair brushed across her shoulder, and the smell of it kept the tears at bay.
"It'll be all right, Helwaz," Basina said. "It'll be all right."
Helwaz cried then, great, hiccuping gasps, her fingers digging into Basina's arms, leaning her head back to rest on her best friend's shoulder.
"I don't want them to send him away."
"I know," Basina said, "but no one has sent him anywhere yet.
You can stay here if you like, or I can walk you home."
Helwa's grief curdled to sudden anger. This was wrong. She couldn't go home. Couldn't go sit by the hearth with her mother and wait to hear what the town fathers decided. Basina had been brave enough to stand up to Brother Tone. Helwaz could go to the Gathering Hall in her own village.
"I want to go and see."
Basina went stiff, but when Helwaz broke free of her embrace and turned around, she was smiling.
"Please, Basina. If I go home, I'll go mad. I'm going to go and listen. And I don't want to go alone. Basina only nodded. And they were off and running again. Helwa's terror tipping over into a slanted, twisted joy, so that she wanted to laugh as she had when they ran beneath the kite Barnard had made them. She kept silent, though, so as not to be heard by the men inside the hall.
Chapter 6 Turn Him Out. From Rit Allah, Chapter 1, Verse 29. Then the emperor set them in the places they should dwell. But there were those who were proud, saying, Who art thou to fix our dwelling place? And they forsook the village rolls, and made their homes on their feet, or in their carts. The emperor cursed them, and named them Kipti, and turned from them. The gathering hall's steep wooden shingled roof was warming beneath the rising sun, burning off the shreds of the wicked night. Barach, builder, had sheeted the eaves in copper, chased with scenes showing the sainted Palatines battling devils as the holy emperor looked on, his divine presence giving them strength. The light slid over the depressions in the metal, making the Palatine's armor glow. The men were inside, in such a hurry that they left the huge iron-bound doors open, and Helwaz and Basina slowed, stepping quietly up to the mortared stone walls. The rock was blessedly cool after the long run, and Helwaz took a moment to lean against it, catching her breath and looking across at Basina. Her body cried out for sleep, but she wasn't going anywhere until she knew her father's fate. Basina's face was serious, but her eyes were lit from the run and the knowledge that their parents would be furious if they were caught. Then Helwaz heard her father's voice, echoing through the long hall. Just listen! Let me finish! There were murmurs, and finally Sigir shouting at them to be silent in the emperor's name. Samson spoke into the silence. I have known most of you since you were children. I soldiered beside Sigir and Barnard. And you, Danid Clothier, Pock Drover, I picked you up by your trews and dragged you into the breach in the seawall at Haravan. You didn't drag, Pock began. I did. And half the damn levy saw me do it, and may the Emperor judge you for a liar when you stand in the shadow of the throne. Pock began again, and Barnard growled for him to shut up. Samson has the right of it. You, Sald Grower, Samson said, I taught you to keep a book for the Emperor's tax collector. You'd be in a debtor's prison if not for me. Aye, Sald said quietly. What's that to do with this? It doesn't change that the Order will come here for you, Samson, and they'll take vengeance if they find you here. It means that you should hear me, Samson said. And think carefully before you put me out. We don't know what the Order will do if they find me here. Might be that Brother Tone is shamed by losing a fight to a mere villager. Might be he'll tell his brothers that he fell or ran into a tree in his haste to work the Emperor's will. Might be the Order has pressing business elsewhere. Might be you're a damned fool, Pock Drover said. Might be we'll all burn because you're too much the coward to do what's best for everyone. If I stay, Samson said, his words slow and his voice even, I have a chance. My wife and daughter have a chance. We can live. If you turn me out, I will die, and my family will be beggared. You might live, Sald said. You don't know. I am no ranger, Samson roared. This isn't Lees, where I can beg on a corner for the kindness of strangers. I will starve, or I will be taken by wolves and brigands. As she heard her father's words, Helwaz felt her breath stop in her throat. If he stayed, her father would fall to the Order. If he went, he would fall to the wilderness. Either way, she would lose him.
The world suddenly felt very small again, and she longed to run to Basina's arms. But it was as it had been when Astra had run toward her. Her body refused to obey. Her vision grayed, and she gasped, desperately swallowing air. That made the color come back into her sight, and the men couldn't have heard her over the noise of all of them shouting at once until the mayor's voice won out over them all.
"Shut it!" Sigir shouted.
The voices gradually went silent, Pox trailing last, muttering complaints.
"We clearly have no agreement," Sigir said more quietly.
"And we know that means the decision rests with me."
"That's not," Pock began.
"That's the law," Sigir interrupted him. "You made me the mayor. If we are at odds, it is my voice that carries." There was quiet then, and Helwaz stood completely still, not daring to breathe for fear of what his next words would be. It seemed to her that even the wind was still, waiting for the mayor's decision. She felt Basina take her hand, squeezed it so hard that the bones ground together. She knew she was probably hurting her, but couldn't stop herself. Basina only squeezed her hand back, kissed her forehead, waited.
"He stays," Sigir said,
and then Basina was holding her up, for Helwa's knees had turned to water.
"Sacred throne, you've killed us all," Pock cursed.
"We will hide them," Sigir said.
"Them?" Sald asked.
"Luba and Helwaz as well. All three in different places. They must not be together until we know the Order has ridden on and is gone from the valley."
"You'll save his family at the cost of all of ours," muttered someone.
But Helwaz didn't recognize the voice.
Pock shouted agreement, then asked, "And when they come asking after them, what then?"
"Then we will tell them that Samson fled into the wood and took his family with him," Barnard said.
"And we will all swear an oath in the shadow of the throne to say that's what happened."
"Even if they put us to the question?" Sald asked, his voice trembling.
"Of course, you great clod," Barnard answered. "There's no need for an oath if they're just going to ask us nicely."
"They'll not put men to the question for nothing," Sigir said. "It's a likely story, and what most would do. They'll believe it."
"They'll know!"
Sald shouted.
"They won't," Sigir said.
"They'll see the lie in your eyes as fear of them. I've seen this before with lords and men of privilege, and either way, Samson is right. He'll die out there. I know I'd be dead and buried back in the old war, and so would most of you if it hadn't been for him. We do for him and his family, and those bastards can shove their flails up their asses business end first. They've killed the folk of Hammersdown, and I won't promise you that they won't come for us next, but I'll be a devil myself before I let them kill our hearts. This is my word, and it is final, by the authority vested in me as the mayor. I am the Emperor's hand in Lutet. Samson stays."
There was a short silence after that, followed by murmurs of,
"Yes, mayor,"
and
"Aye, mayor."
A shuddering breath from Samson.
"Thank you. Unless any of you consider treachery, remember this. The Order may come, but eventually they will go. Samson and I will be here forever, as will Barnard and our cousins and children. And we will not forget the man who turns traitor and surrenders his own to ravagers. Am I plain?"
"You are plain," the men said.
"Who will hide them?" Puck asked.
"If it's as you say, the flail will fall hardest on them if they're discovered."
"I'll take Samson," Sigir said. "If it's my word that carries today, then I should take the greater share of the risk."
"I'll take Helwaz," Barnard said.
"She and Basina are practically sisters anyway. It's the closest to home she could be."
"Aye,
That's best. We'll send Luba to Deuteria. Best not to have a woman grown hiding in a man's house. Deuteria was the village herber, living alone out in the barrens beyond the sentry tower. She tended a small garden there, and gave counsel to some of the wives when they'd a problem needing women's wisdom. The men muttered assent, and Helwaz heard the voices coming closer, moving toward the doors. Helwaz realized she was crying, cuffed at the tears, as Basina dragged her around the building's side. There was more talk, but the voices were too muted by the stone for the girls to hear. A moment later, the men emerged blinking into the rising sun.
"To your homes," Sagira said. "Tell all that Samson and his family have fled. The less who know the truth, the better."
There was the shuffling of feet as the men set off, but they stopped at a word from the mayor.
"I don't need to remind you of the risk we are taking today. The greatest danger lies in weak hearts and turned coats. I need you all to remember the oath you just swore. You will not cry to the order for mercy. Say it now while you look me in the eyes."
"We swear it,"
a chorus of voices responded.
"Even you, Pock Drover?" Barnard asked.
Helwaz bit her knuckle as the silence that followed stretched.
"Aye," Pock said at last. "Even me."
And then the men were shuffling out the door. Basina and Helwaz tensed to run around behind the hall if Sigir and Samson came any closer, but they heard no footsteps, only Samson letting out a breath that sounded like he'd been holding it for a while.
"You know that Sald and Pock
were the only ones who spoke against me, but most agreed with them."
Sigir sighed.
"I know it. You really put your fist in the hive this time, Master Factor."
"He killed a little girl," Samson said, his voice hard. "Would you have done any different?"
"No," Sigir said, "but I'd have made damn sure that I killed him."
Samson laughed, though Helwaz didn't see what was funny.
"Aye, maybe you would have. Only think kindly of me until the order actually comes. Pock's no fortune-teller. He may well be wrong." "For all our sakes, I hope he is. Barnard is with us, and that's the important thing. He's a mountain, that one. Men are right to fear his wrath."
"Aye," Samson agreed.
"They may try to unseat me, Samson. Call for a new mayor. They'd have to send to Lees for an observer. It would take time."
"Aye," Sigir said.
"It would. Hopefully enough time."
They were quiet for a moment then, until Samson asked,
"Why did you do it then? Why not turn me out?" "You think I don't want to?"
"It's not just because you saved me in the old war, Samson. Truth is that there are no heroes in a pike block. We stand and fall together. We saved one another."
"Then why speak for me?"
"Because I am not like these pilgrims, with pious words in my mouth and murder in my heart. Because putting you out would kill me just as surely as it would kill you. Because unlike the Order, I believe in the writ.
That you should fall, that your brother may stand?"
"Aye," Sigir said. "I didn't stand against old Ludwig's knights because I wanted to live. I stood because I wanted you to live. And Clodio, and Barnard, and every man who came to arms in the levee. That will never change. Not while I draw breath."
"You have the heart of a Palatine," Samson said.
"And the bladder of an old man. Go home, Samson. Tell your family to make ready. I'll come collect you after I've had a piss."
Helwaz heard the crunching of her father's boots as he turned for home.
Go,
Basina whispered. If you run fast enough, you can beat him there. Helwaz kissed her and squeezed her arm.
Thank you. Go,
Basina said, pushing her. Helwaz ran as fast as she could for the second time that morning, racing through the woods that ringed the common, outpacing her father easily. She would still arrive just moments before him, and out of breath at that. He would know, but she felt she had to at least try. Her feet scarcely touched the ground the whole way. Her father would be staying, and he had told Sigir that Pock's dire prediction might not come to pass. She believed him. She had to believe him. Even better, she would hide with the Tinkers. Basina would be with her, and they could spend their nights trading secrets by the hearth's light. Out from under her parents' thumb, surrounded by the marvels of Barnard's workshop, her parents alive and well. It wouldn't be so bad. A part of her was even excited for it all to begin. She'd thought her father had ambled slowly, but when she emerged from the woods by the well outside her front door, Samson was in sight, hands thrust into the pockets of his breeches, walking toward her. Helwaz desperately tried to slow her breathing, to wipe the sweat from her forehead, but it was no use. Samson had to see that she'd just arrived and had come running hard. Her father only ruffled her hair, ignoring the sweat on her forehead. You're a good girl, Helwaz. This next bit may be hard on you. Chapter 7 Lodging. From Rit, Leah, Chapter 14, Verse 1. Three manners of men, the emperor decreed. The villager, who toils for the good of all, bearing the name of his trade. The soldier, who fights for the protection of all, bearing the name of his regiment. And the order above all, my own, my hand in this world, bearing no name but mine own. Barnard and Chunsia met Helwaz at the door, grave-faced and silent. They gathered the family together in the workshop, with Bolt and Blade, Barnard's two hounds, sitting attentively beside their master, as if they were part of the meeting as well. "You all well know the gravity of this," Barnard said. "The order may come looking for her, and it's up to all of us to make sure that we don't give them any reason to expect she's here."
"I promise I won't be any trouble," Helwa said. "I can sleep here in the workshop, and Basina and I can—"
Barnard shook his head. "You can't sleep in the workshop, or anywhere else you might be seen. Hiding you means hiding you. We will bring you meals and let you out for a short while, and only then at night. It will be hard for you, Helwaz, but you must remember it is the only way to keep you safe." Helwa's stomach fell. This wasn't what she expected at all.
"Where will you hide me?"
Gunther jerked his chin toward the vault door, looking askance at his father. "Aye," Barnard said. "The vault is sacrosanct. Only the Imperial Procurer can order it opened. It will be blasphemy to let her see inside, but I suppose we are well beyond that now." Helwaz looked at the heavy bronze door, imagined the tight, airless space behind it. Her hands shook.
"I have to stay in there?"
"We will be just outside, child," Chunsia said. "We'll look in on you as much as we can." Helwaz felt tears prick at the corners of her eyes. "Will it be for a long time?" Barnard smiled. "I hope not, Helwaz. We will see what comes of your father's defiance. I know it is frightening, but you must remember we are doing it to protect you. As soon as it's safe, we will let you out. I swear it in the shadow of the throne. Basina put an arm around Helwa's shoulders. I'll come in to talk to you, Helwas. Can't I sleep in there with her, Papa?
No. Barnard shook his head. If the order comes calling, they will want to know where my children are. I cannot say you are in the vault. There is no good reason for a young girl to be in there.
Helwas did cry now, though quietly. She felt like a diseased creature, separated from those she loved the most for fear of infecting them. I'm sorry, she said, between sobs. I don't mean to be ungrateful.
I know you don't, child, Chinsia said. Come.
Barnard stood and took a great iron key from his belt.
Might be you'll think more of your quarters once you've had a look at them.
Now or never.
I'm afraid so, Helwas, Barnard said. There's no telling when the order will come. We've already delayed too long.
The iron key fit into a hole in the plain surface of the bronze. The black metal rattled, but it turned easily, the tumblers sounding with a deep thunk that made the door tremble despite its weight. Barnard put his hand on the ring.
Stand back now, Helwas. Once it gets moving, it's hard to stop.
He hauled on the ring, stepping back as the thick door swung silently open. Musty air billowed out, drying Helwa's throat and making her cough. The vault smelled like a root cellar soaked in oil. Its log walls had been lined with small stones to keep out prying eyes, and it was much colder inside than out.
We'll give you our thickest blankets, Chinsia said, and candles.
Helwas realized that she would need to keep the candles lit all day long. The tight space was packed with hungry darkness, as black as the night sky in a storm. Fear gripped her so tightly that she trembled. The thought of being locked up in that tiny space, alone in the darkness with the smell of earth and metal and oil. She started to cry again, turned and hid her face against Basina's shoulder.
This is where we store our imperial commissions, Barnard said. You're the first person other than the procurer to see it. That's something, eh?
Helwas knew it was something, indeed, but that did nothing to banish her fear, the tightness in her chest at the thought of all that darkness pressing in on her.
Come, Barnard said, stepping inside.
Helwas tried to follow, found her legs would not obey her. Barnard frowned over his shoulder. He had told her there was no time. She imagined the order riding up the workshop door, shouting in alarm as they saw her. She tried again to step into the darkness, and again she couldn't.
Come, Helwas, Barnard said. The only way to weather cold water is to jump right in.
I can't, Helwas said. I'm not brave.
You are the bravest girl I have ever met, besides my own daughter, Barnard said. Come.
Basina's words echoed in her mind.
Father says, being brave isn't not being frightened. It's doing a thing even though you are.
And even though she was frightened, even though a part of her was certain that the moment she stepped past the transom of the bronze door, the cold darkness would swallow her. She took a step, and then another, and she was inside. Barnard was right. It wasn't so bad, or at least it was no worse than she'd imagined. The space was cramped, and the smell of rust and old leather so strong it tickled her nostrils. The racks lining the walls were littered with tinker engines, some nearly as big as her, some as small as a beetle. Many looked unfinished, with rods and pipes sticking out of them at odd angles. The room was dominated by two engines shaped like men, hanging from wooden racks in the room's center. One of them was unfinished, its arms stubby and half-formed, one leg missing. The other looked more or less complete. As Helwa's eyes adjusted to the darkness, She saw that they were like suits of armor, giant metal frames articulated with brass rondels to give the rough shape of a man's limbs.